Hello everyone, and welcome to Heavy Potties Heavycast episode 90. I hope I got that wrong. Usually Noyan does the numbers. But he is in Hawaii, supposedly for a conference, although why would you have like a tech conference in Hawaii? I don't know. So instead of him, we have Austin. Hey, Austin.
Hey, man. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you. So what is the moniker that you want? Do you want to be from Out on the Sunlight or from Audio Tree?
Oh, man, I could be both. Let's do both.
So let's start with Audio Tree because I think that's a bit less intuitive. What is Audio Tree and what do you do for them?
Okay, so Audio Tree is... Well, first of all, I'm going to start. I just want to say on air that I'm a big fan of the podcast. I'm really excited to be here right now. Okay, so I'll continue. Audio Tree is a multifaceted audio and visual production company. We're based in Chicago. And what we do is we help talented up-and-coming artists find a platform to be seen and heard. And the way we're known for doing that is through really high-quality studio sessions with really high-quality audio. And I, in the company, work as their art director. So I do a lot of branding and marketing and graphic stuff. Everyone in the company wears a lot of hats because there's about 20 of us. and so we just do a lot. And we're trying to kind of bridge a gap between being an artist and being a label.
Yeah. And I think, the first time I heard Audio Tree, I think it was 2 years ago, 2014. So that's already 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I was kind of blown away because you often want to see live performances, but that means that you have to compromise on sound quality.
Yeah.
Right? Because people get, their audio from the board or GoPros and stuff like that. And it usually sounds like crap. And then suddenly there was this thing that kind of captured the live energies that you get only with live performances, but also really, really high quality audio. So we definitely appreciate that. And you had like, so many bands. Sleep Makes Waves is one of my biggest highlights.
Yeah.
Thank You, Scientist. What are your personal, high points of bands that you had on?
I loved both the Caspian sessions. I was not there. I was not working at Audio Tree for the first Caspian session, but I was there for the second one. And the energy and just pure artistry that those six gentlemen bring to a studio is totally unmatched. Pine Grove is another really, really great session. Just really, they just played a really strong performance. And that's kind of that's the thing really, is that when you do an Audio Tree session, what people are hearing is the literal live performance. We don't edit that stuff. It's exactly what the band brings us. So when you get a really great sounding audio clip from a really great band, it's because they were in the room together, looking at each other in the eyes, and performing the music the way they wanted to perform it. Mm-hmm. And it's magical in a way when it really, really clicks. And you're sitting in the mixing room watching it happen, and you're going, man, this is kind of insane. I wonder what people are going to think of it on the internet. And then, of course, goes out, and then the internet kind of takes it from there. But there's been so many success stories of bands starting at Audio Tree, and it kind of helped launch their careers in a way.
You've had has Covet done Audio Tree?
Yeah, Covet played one. That was a sick session for sure. I mean, it's just I actually remember Yvette was sick that day. Is that how you say her name? I think it's Yvette.
Yvette, yeah, I think
so. She was sick that day, and she still played the shit out of her guitar, and the rest of the band also. Played a very solid session. So it's just crazy when, you get in the energy of that room and the energy of the crew and the audio engineers and all this stuff. It just is a really special thing that I feel I feel proud to be a part of, although I really don't work in the studio all that much. I'm kind of in the office a lot. I definitely to some degree understand what goes into the actual production of the sessions.
Yeah, for sure. And, art direction is invaluable this day. I think the internet makes it somehow more important because more and more people find you through your leaflet, right? Your website is your leaflet and all the merch around that is your identity today. That's how I feel.
Yeah, Well, it's funny, like, you know, we want people to visit our website. And, you know, thinking about the statistic I know about how many people visit our website versus, like, how they find us elsewhere, we have to just constantly, we have to stay, like, yeah, we have to stay totally on top of all the socials and all that stuff. But the website is, like, that's the holy grail. You can find everything we've ever done on there. And I like to think it's pretty well organized. And I say that biasly because I designed it. but like, there was a lot of thought put into how we would present ourselves to an audience, just because there is so much. Like, it's 2017, the mid of 2017. We've been going since 2011. And we've done over 800 sessions. And that's like, that scratches the surface of what the capabilities of what we're able to do are. We live stream like full concerts out of Lincoln Hall in Chicago. We have a new series called Far Out, which is like an audio tree session, but in a remote location. And that's that's actually gotten a lot of really, really great traction, because it's just, it's always crazy to watch a band perform in a swimming pool. And you're hearing it, and you're watching it, and you're thinking to yourself, like, is this really actually being recorded right now? And you kind of second-guess the audio a little bit. Yeah. And the truth is, like, all of it was recorded on the spot and just mixed in the studio and nothing else. Like, it just came out that way. So we were able to sort of, like, show off these bands in a different setting, which is really cool. Because the studio setting can kind of get... stale, at least from like an aesthetic standpoint.
Have you seen Shining's music videos out in the field?
I've seen the one they did on like the cliff.
So before the one on the cliff, which is also pretty cool, they did a few clips, and one of them for You Won't Forget is a really good clip, because they actually did it on the ruins of the studio where they recorded their first album, I think. It got torn down to make way for fucking condos. And it's amazing. They have one mic and, you know, the saxophone, synths, vocals, two guitars, bass and drums. And it sounds so good. It's like,
really,
it feels like cheating, and the energy on it. You gotta watch that. But besides.
Yeah. I'll never check that out. Yeah. That sounds insane. It's so cathartic to like record something on top of the rubble in which you used to record music on. That's pretty insane.
Jorgen really like takes his saxophone and gets in people's faces, you know, like people filming it. He's like, don't just stand there and film it. Let's, you know, be part of the experience. And he just jumps at them.
Yeah. That's powerful. Awesome. They're a pretty exciting band.
For sure. So beyond being in Audio Tree, you're in a band yourself, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in a band called Outrun the Sunlight.
Yeah. Which I love, as you know, and friends of the blog.
Yes, yes, we love
you. We'll talk about the Chicago scene in a second. But yeah. Tell us a bit about Out on the Sunlight. So, post-rock, is that how you would...
Yeah, post-metal, perhaps.
Yeah.
Just because it's a heavier sound. We're an instrumental metal band. and there's lots of those, and that can fall into many categories. I'm always interested with the first thing people think of when I say that, if they know metal music. The quick answer is like Animals as Leaders. But it's always fun to show our music to people who have no idea what instrumental metal is. They're like, oh, it's metal without vocals. That's kind of insane, you know? But we're a band from Chicago that formed in 2011 and, started as a studio project. And we just released our third album called Redbird independently. Mm-hmm. Which came out in April, and it's a record about love and change, and it's the most personal work I've ever made, as far as music goes. And
it shows.
Thank you. Yeah, it was definitely. I mean, all of this stuff is a labor of love, just because we are not a gigantic touring band, but we do. I do really see the value in instrumental music. In general, and I think my main, it's almost like the guy from Sleep Makes Waves in the Audio Tree session put these words into my brain, but he was just talking about how, Alex Wilson was talking about how the beauty of instrumental music is that it it transcends the language barrier. Mm-hmm. And that's been true for us, because I look at our demographics and I see fans from every corner of the earth. It's astounding. Like, and it wouldn't be possible, I don't think, if we had vocals per se. I know English is like a big thing to speak. I mean, you're from Israel and we're speaking English right now. But it's kind of an interesting idea to think that like this kind of music can transcend the language barrier. And I've actually seen it do so in the sense where someone guessed the meaning of a song without ever having heard a vocalist say in a lyric, metaphor, what it was about. And I think that's an amazing thing that instrumental music can do.
Noyan and I have discussed this several times from the opposite direction, and I'm not saying it as a criticism or anything.
Sure.
But how often listening to bands who have vocals in a language you don't understand can do very interesting things musically, because languages have their own timbres and sound ranges. So often, you know, it's two different approaches to the same thing. One approach says, you know, go instrumental, and then, as you said, communicate outside of words. And then the other approach, I feel, and a good balance between these is important, is listening, you know, pushing your barriers, and listening to artists who sing in a language that you don't understand. It also does something. You get the nonverbal communication in voices, if that makes sense. You know, like the range of someone expressing emotions through singing that isn't necessarily conveyed via words. I feel like there's a whole interesting field there.
That's really interesting. I can't even, yeah. I can't think of a metal band that sings in a different language that I listen to on a daily basis.
Stuff. I mean,
I'm sure there is.
I mean, that's partially, you know, there's a few factors that contribute to that. One of them is your geographical location, where the U.S. tends to be self-sufficient, self-contained. And then the other is music journalism tends to do that as well. We've kind of been trying to combat that. We've recommended there's Lysander, who's Eastern European, and Violet Cold, who sings in Azerbaijani Turkish. He does post-black metal. And, you know, tons of bands who obviously sing in Norwegian and Swedish and all that stuff, and French bands. So there's really interesting stuff out there. So, you know, I wanted to bring this up later, but while we're on the subject of vocals, I guess we can't really address that without speaking about Chester Bennington.
Yeah, definitely.
Of Linkin Park. If someone listening has been under a rock for the past week, Chester Bennington, who is the harsh scream vocalist of Linkin Park, he was committed suicide by hanging a few days ago, and it was a terrible loss. He was, I mean, Linkin Park, one of the biggest names in metal, right? One of the biggest names in the first generation of bands to kind of get on MTV2 and Headbangers Ballroom and all that stuff. Super seminal band. Mm-hmm. And especially, you know, him, who was always so wounded when singing, right? He always had that quality of pain and anguish and stuff like that. And I guess it caught up to him. So how did that, where did that meet you? How did that make you feel?
I mean, I thought it was fake at first, to be honest with you. I read the headline, and we a couple of us at Audio Tree that day all read the headline, and I just remember like one cover just saying over and over again, this is fake. This is totally fake. And we're like, no, we're reading it on this and this and this and this, and it's not fake. And I was like, thinking in the back of my head, like, maybe it is fake. And of course it wasn't. Which is shocking to me. I'm a young person. I'm 25. Hybrid Theory was like one of the first metal albums I ever owned. Modern metal albums I ever owned. And I have like a lot of attachment to the way those songs are written. I mean, like part of the reason I started playing guitar is because I would like learn how to play Linkin Park songs. And part of the reason I compose the way I compose is because of I'm not a music theorist, but the way Linkin Park composes music.
Yeah.
And the chords they choose in particular always had an influence on me. And then now in my mid-20s, listening to a lot of music that I listen to that isn't, you know, exactly the heaviest of the heavy. I hear so many bands like just so directly influenced by Linkin Park. I'll hear this. Mm-hmm. I'll hear like a vocal line from Architects that sounds like Chester Bennington, or I'll hear like, I think the biggest one is maybe Bring Me the Horizon, their latest record, sure. And just thinking like that is so Linkin Park influenced, and they really brought it out in a new light. I personally love That's the Spirit. That was like one of my favorite records in the year that came out. I think it was 2015.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty hard to think that that just one more person was too overwhelmed by the world and decided to end it. I know he left behind 6 kids, and he left behind a godson who was oh my god, I'm blanking on the name. It's not an asshole. Stone Temple Pilots.
Chris Cornell's son, right?
I'm sorry, what?
He's Chris Cornell's son?
Yeah, Chris Cornell's son is Chester Bennington, who was his godfather.
Yeah.
So
that's
It's just and really sad to think about all the people he left behind.
And his bandmates. And
I can't even like begin to sympathize, or I mean like there's no part of me that will ever understand. You know?
Yeah, what it feels like. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, two things that really jumped out at me the second that I heard about it is one, like Linkin Park stayed Linkin Park for so long.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't change members. They just kept at it. So I can't imagine what it's like to lose someone like that. That's one. And two, you know, it's funny what you just said, that you're 25 and it's one of the first metal albums you've ever had. And I'm 30. So there's not an insubstantial amount of time between us, right? Five years is a long time in the music industry. And Hybrid Theory is one of my first albums. So it wasn't just a fad. It wasn't just an album that a specific year bought. It was like an entry point for several generations of people who are now part of the community, whether they're making music or writing about music. And it's really hard to understate how influential that album was. And Meteora after it, and some of the other albums past it, although they weren't the most popular, also had some really solid tunes on them. And even beyond their music, like when you see he had a few problematic you know, he spoke out against people who were unhappy with their direction, stuff like that, which I can understand. But whenever he was filmed with fans, he was so wholesome and positive and powerful and present in the moment that it's really hard to, as you said, contemplate the fact that someone so loved and so adored and so supported could, you know, succumb to depression. And I guess this is the point in the podcast where I say, like, if you're listening to this and you suffer from this stuff, reach out to someone. There's all sorts of services you can call and people around you. And even if you think that no one loves you, someone out there does. And I combat my own mental illnesses. And just, it's easier when you do it with other people.
And I do too. I do too. You know, it's true. Like, there's a really great organization. Shout out to Johnny Boucher. You'll probably never hear this. Mm-hmm. Called Hope for the Day, that is actually based in Chicago. That's an anti-suicide prevention helpline. It's super active in the music industry. They're on Warped Tour for every year, I swear to God. They're a really great resource. Hope for the Day, if you're listening and you're curious to check out, a support system. They're really quite amazing. I've just recently watched an interview with Chester, you know, after his passing, where he talks about this idea in his music that he's trying to convey, all the ideas that are in his head that are just a bad place to be. And it like really, it hit me in a way that I didn't expect it to hit me. And maybe it's because he's passing, and maybe because I'm in a time in my life where I feel like I need, some sort of assistance in my mental health, and mm-hmm. everyone listening, I have been doing that, you know, like, not to worry, but it's just kind of crazy to hear he talks about it in such a realistic, positive way, And then it's just kind of strange to think that this still could happen.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and you just, him. And it's too early to know really what happened in his life. And no one's allowed to judge that, because we all internally struggle, whether you're Beyonce or the dude who owns the bar down the street. Like, it's all the same thing. We're all humans with brains.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, we're not going to go into the whole the toxic discourse and stuff like that, because I don't want to spend too much time on it. Mm-hmm. But the only thing I'll say is, like you said, we all have brains, and brains get illnesses. Like, depression is a disease, just like diabetes, just like hepatitis, just like tuberculosis. Like, you wouldn't judge people who have those diseases. Well, yeah. Some people do, but you shouldn't. And the same thing with depression. It's not that he was lazy or a coward or anything like that.
No.
He had a physical problem that was obviously complicated by social circumstance, psychological circumstance. And that entire field of the interplay between those things is still being researched and is very complicated. But people who get to those places, it's really hard for people who haven't been in those places to empathize and understand what they're going through.
Yeah. Well, rest in peace, yeah. Chester.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. His name will surely live on for decades, like, such a huge influence. Yeah. But you mentioned the Chicago-based organization, and one of the only questions that I really came into this podcast with is, let's talk about the Chicago scene.
Okay.
Because I'm really interested in local scenes in the U.S. and kind of how they grow. There's the Denver scene and obviously the New York scene and Cali and all the sorts of stuff like that. But there also seems to be a Chicago scene, right?
Huge.
Do you feel that? Do you feel like you're part of a local scene?
I feel like I'm part of, like, an uprising sometimes. there's, like, to me, I think there's a Chicago sound, which is...
What's that sound?
Well, when I think about music, and this is not metal at all, there's just something about the sensibility of the way people write in Chicago that is, you know, it's, I don't even know how to describe it. I'm just gonna rifle off names of bands that I think that, like, you could go look them up and they would sound nothing alike. But I think of Monobody, I think of Siom, mm-hmm. I think of Namdi, I think of Rat Boys, I think of Whitney, I think of Slow Mass. Just all these bands that are kind of pushing the next generation of musicians. That's like the next generation of musicians, and then it'll be another level before them. I can think of, especially in the metal community, was like Russian Circles and Pelican and that kind of thing. And I feel very connected because it's part of my job to be connected. Both with Audio Tree and Outrun. And if I'm not connected, I don't really get anywhere. But at the same time, like, there's like a, you know, there's shows all the time. There's house shows all the time. The venues that I work with and know the people who book them are very interested in new music, new and up and coming music. So there's never really a lack of, talent here. And it always seems like something new is happening. There's also like an enormous amount of free street festivals that happen in the summer that are one of the most amazing parts of living in Chicago, is that there'll be like a B-level lineup of musicians playing at a free festival. And sometimes it's not even B-level. Sometimes it's like Dinosaur Jr. headlines, or like one year Def Heaven headlined. It was like the year that New Bermuda came out, and they were like the headliner on a free street festival, and they happened every single weekend.
That's crazy.
And it's a pretty amazing community, and it's constantly evolving and constantly changing. And, you know, like Outrun is one part of the metal community, and Audio Tree is one big part of the just tastemaker community, which is really cool to be a part of.
I feel like, you know, you mentioned Russian Circles and Pelican and the sound in general. It's interesting to me that there seems to be like a predisposition towards the post genres.
Yeah.
So Monobody, Mathlock, Postlock, and you guys, and Siom, obviously. Aren't, is Yautja, are they from Chicago?
They're not from Chicago. I think they're from,
no,
I want to say, but Tennessee?
Yeah, but I think they're, like, they're close with the Chicago scene, from what I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I think those dudes played other bands and things like that.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing to consider. And I also look to the Chicago scene because, well, we're connected, you know, you guys, we consider you our friends. And but we also have Kyle and Simon over there.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And I don't see I don't see Simon in too many shows. I don't think he's 21 yet.
Yeah, but he'll be telling
soon. Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, and you have Kyle, you know, who's a fucking force of nature all on his own.
Truly. Although I heard he's moving to Florida.
Sorry?
I heard he was moving to Florida, actually.
There's all sorts of stuff. I don't wanna out him.
Oh, okay. I don't wanna out him
fine,
either.
It's fine. It's not an actual secret. So I feel like the Chicago scene is really interesting to me because it feels very, I don't wanna say grassrootsy because that like comes from politics and I don't think that's what I mean. But it feels like a network more than other scenes that are like motivated by really big bands. You guys have more, it's more decentralized. That's the word I was looking for.
Decentralized.
There are more nodes of operation rather than huge names that kind of drag everyone with them.
Yeah, I think
it kind of feels like...
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
I just kind of feel like everybody's pushing together in all sorts of directions.
I think that's true of the general arts community here. I mean, I went to Columbia for 4 years. I studied their film program and... like, the weird part about it was, at the end of the film program, the kind of, the capstone project there is that you do, like, this mock Hollywood, because it's as if Columbia is saying to all their film students, go to L.A., go work in the film industry out in L.A.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, why would I want to do that when I live in this city already, and there are so many people who live here and work here that want to change how specifically film is being made. And it was, I mean, to me, not going to LA was one of the best decisions I ever made. And so my point in saying that is I feel like there is that tight-knit arts community where you can do whatever you want. You can try whatever you want. If, you know, you can, if it attracts an audience, like, awesome. If it doesn't, you try something else. Like, it does feel like everyone seems to know everyone through some small degree, and you end up at like art galleries where you see a musician that you played a show with, or you see an artist that you recognize from a mural they had painted on the side of a building. And it's just a lot of that stuff. It's everybody's sort of interconnected in like a really, in a huge, huge web of creativity. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds amazing. So we're coming towards the end of the interview, and I think I have like two final questions that like can maybe wrap this into a larger context. So I find that the most interesting thing about OutRun is the sense of some sort of momentum or progress. Like Redbird and Terrapin, on the surface they sound similar, but I don't think they are. I think they're very different albums, at least to my ears. So how much of this kind of development vector is something that you guys think about? Or is it something that just is born from who you are, the dynamics as a band, the recording process, stuff like that?
I think we were influenced by the Chicago scene to sound the way we sound on Redbird. When Terrapin was written, the band hadn't really formed yet. And the recordings of Terrapin are in some ways like glorified demos. Redbird's the first time that there's ever been a concrete personal meaning to all the music, to all of the imagery, to the music video, to the way we talked about it. And that feels like it feels like that's art is being made for a real purpose rather than art for the sake of art, which isn't wrong to do that. I'd always been interested in assigning meaning to music and being influenced by the writers that I am. A lot of the stuff they write about is very like otherworldly or existential, or sometimes just kind of nonsense, but the music is really good. And I really wanted to kind of like mold the ideas of music that has strong personal meaning. And when I say that, I mean stuff that's relatable. And mm-hmm. I was thinking about bands like Caspian, and I was thinking about bands like Russian Circles, and some of the stuff I knew about what their music was actually about, and then tried to translate that over. So it was definitely a conscious decision.
Cool. So the last thing I want to ask you, and I think I'd be stoned in the heavy block circles if I didn't. You got to give us the lowdown on Warforged. You got to give us the lowdown. What's happening?
I don't know how much I can say.
But there is something on which you can't say anything.
Yes.
Yes.
Adrian is okay. I'll leave it with Adrian Perez is a madman.
He is a madman. I follow him on Instagram. I think it's Instagram or is it Facebook? And it's one of the most enlightening profiles I've ever seen.
I've never met anyone like him. And I'm glad and I'm very happy to know him.
Okay, so I'll be patient and I won't push you further. So thank you so much for coming on, man. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was really fun talking to you, man. Thank you.
Cool. We should do this again at some point.
That would be great.
Sweet. Thanks for listening, guys. Short episode this week. We'll be back on our usual format if Noyan will grace us with his presence. And until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.